Welcome to We'll Always Have Paris. I'm Rachel Capel-Pideo.
And I'm Chris Nguyens.
And I'm Nav Kotitambra.
And now it's time for the Waitrose mince pies of This Week in Love, This Week in Christmas.
Chris just vomited, but he's back. You're doing great, Chris. Here's a cloth. Yeah.
The Waitrose mince pies. Yum, 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 like I say.
I like that you're trying out new catchphrases.
What, yum, yum, yum.
No, I really want your catchphrase to be from the Schitt's Creek. Num, num for us.
Yeah.
All right, I'll try that from now on in. My catchphrase is num, num for us.
Just Chris num, num is fine.
I don't know how to take this. Is it bullying? It feels like bullying, but I don't feel bad. No,
this is objectifying. This is the scene in Barbie where she's like, mine very much has an undertone of violence. You're just being sexually objectified.
Well, in which case, fine. All right, well, this is num-nums. I'm not going to refer to
pudding of,
I'm going to refer to myself in the third person. You can refer to me as num num if you want, but
oi num num.
Now that definitely felt like bullying. I didn't feel
it's
objectified a little bit, like it's
oi num num, looking good in those pants.
I'll pay you the next episode if you introduce yourself as oi num num. I will literally pay you.
Anyway, onto Num Num's question of the week.
Breaking news. This Week in Love has now been updated to Num Num's news of the week.
Yeah, it's a very simple question. Because Christmas is coming up, and I was thinking about kind of Christmas dinner parties and stuff like that, and I just thought, like, of all of the people who we have talked about so far on We'll Always Have Paris, who would you invite to your Christmas dinner party?
Okay, well,
and what would we be serving? And let's talk through a little bit what this dinner party would be like.
You're thinking this is still the Sutanya episode. Now he's like, I'm serving whatever Kevin cooks. Kevin's.
How many people? Okay, do we have a limit on the number of former guests that we can include?
Well, I thought about
former guests. James Baldwin, former guest.
I thought about this and I thought, no, I think that you can set the limit on what you think would be a good dinner party. So okay. It's not like five people. I mean, it could just be, you know, for example, you and the entire cast of Moulin Rouge. I mean, if you wanted it to be.
What a girl dream.
Sorry, also listening to Smartless, just got through the Ewan McGregor episode. It's amazing. They're like, Moulin Rouge, it was so good. And he's like, well, thank you. And they're like, would you do another musical? And he's like, absolutely. I was like, someone had not heard our episode.
Or maybe or definitely did.
And only cared about one opinion.
Yeah. He's like, one third is still great. Okay.
So, I mean, it might take you a moment to think back over all of the various people who we've had on the
pod. Oh, it has to be people we've had on the pod.
Yeah. It's not okay. Your ideal. It's of all of the people who we've talked about before.
Okay, Prince Harry, Meghan Markle for sure.
Oh, hold on. Wait. No, it has to be from the love stories. I'm sorry, you can't. Because otherwise it's anybody from pop culture.
What's your problem?
So Taylor Swift can't come.
Taylor Swift.
Sorry that you're happy with Jennifer Coolidge, but... Sorry that the romance died, but...
Well, me and Coolidge are hosting. So,
me and Coolidge! That is how you would refer to her. She is Coolidge.
Yeah, me and Coolidge hosting. Jean-Paul Sartre. He's
God.
No, they're
Coolidge...
just like machinating in the corner.
Can you imagine Coolidge and Sartre together?
I think Sartre would probably get on well with her. He seemed like a pretty gregarious guy.
Coolidge would get along with everybody who we've interviewed.
Absolutely.
We've interviewed.
Sorry, this is just now a Jennifer Coolidge fan podcast.
Please refer to her by her friend.
This is Num Num's Jennifer Coolidge podcast.
If you weren't listening last week, by the way, the reason we're talking about Jennifer Coolidge is because she's my ideal celebrity power couple with me. This is just...
I'm just imagining Coolidge's voice saying, "Nom, nom," every time she calls for you. Hey, nom, nom.
truly ideal. Okay. It has to be from the love story.
Okay, I won't. I'm not gonna lie. One amazing dinner party. I mean, I might not live through it. Would be to invite the cast, not the cast, but like the literary cast of Dangerous Liaison.
Wow.
Imagine and not tell them either. Not tell them they're all gonna be there, or have them come at like staggered times. Like I just feel like they're gonna. I think that no matter how I. As long as there's a game element to it,
yeah.
And as long as they know that everyone's being screwed over, they're going to jump in with glee. Like, they're not going to be that mad that they got screwed over as long as everyone is being made a fool of.
Okay.
There'll be very little eating.
Yeah, counterpoint. The opposite of this might be the Les Mis literary character. Where everybody except Cosette and Marius are just shoveling down food as fast as they can.
Just to go back to the Dangerous Liaisons, though. I mean, like, it's a book which has been remade over and over again. I'm wondering... I'm putting this out there for any producers listening, a remake of Dangerous Liaisons where instead of it being epistolary, it's all podcasts. So you get the kind of like the podcast.
Oh, okay.
And maybe voice notes. So maybe it's a radio play of Dangerous Liaisons.
That's a really good idea.
Oh, I'm sure one's been done.
No, but
BBC, come on.
I don't know if it has not been done though. That's such a great idea because there is so much that has to be. Like, the beauty of the book is that we are verbally being told things that visually really don't make sense. Like, we cannot figure it out. That's a wonderful way of doing it.
Okay, here's mine. It would be the brother and sister from The Dreamers with Josephine Baker.
Oh,
just for the chaos of it. It would be absolute chaos.
And when that cheetah gets involved.
We're having an amazing orgy.
Yep. And then we get
eaten by the cheetah and just dominate the news cycle.
I love it.
Amazing.
I feel like that's the celebrity power couple version of a Christmas dinner party because it really would be like scandalous. Like, oh, I love that. Chris, what about you?
I don't know. I asked the question. I didn't really come up with an answer. I mean, like maybe Abelard and Heloise and Napoleon off the top of my head.
I feel like you and Coolidge could have a really nice conversation with them.
I always think, like, I'm fascinated. I mean, like, look, if we've really got the ability to bring anyone out of the past, then I imagine just sitting around and chatting with people from the 12th century. And
how's your middle French?
Yeah, middling. I'm imagining a kind of a Doctor Who situation here as well, where you're just capable of talking to them.
Actually, I'm so surprised that you have yet to bring up Manuche Mud. it's tailor-made for this. That's all that Romo's characters do. They pretend they're at a dinner party, but the dinner party is everywhere.
I was talking with my father, the actual filmmaker, the other night, and I said, by the way, did you ever see My Night at Maud's? And he goes, ah, Manuche Nopche Mud, which is shocking because he basically knows noun-based French. I was like, oh, but I guess those are nouns. Anyways,
mostly, yeah.
Mostly. And I was like, but did you see it though? And he was like, I never felt the need. And I was like, really? And he's like, I was like, it's pretty slow moving. He's like, that's what I heard. That's why I never felt the need.
And didn't feel Claire's knee either, so.
We have a lovely slow-moving dinner party with me and Maud and...
it lasts 6 days.
I just feel like Coolidge and Maud would have... I mean, that would be its own kind of, you know, entr'acte in the dinner party sequence.
Imagine a remake of Manuche Maud, but with Jennifer Coolidge playing Maud.
Oh my God. That is watchable. That is some watchable shit.
That's amazing.
Oh my God. We're saying TM will always have Barris. TM Num Num. It's like, I'm so glad we're breaking for the holidays and they're going to forget this.
But I won't. Anything. I simply won't.
So, from We'll Always Have Paris, this is two absolutely chaotic dinner parties and the most boring dinner party you've ever heard in your life.
It's like the kind of question that I would answer if I was trying to get into Oxford. Like, oh no, probably you know, Abelard and Heloise and Napoleon.
Oh, I was thinking of My Night at Maud's.
Oh, sorry.
That one's just incomprehensible.
I love 12th century conversationalists.
You know. Also pre-castration Abelard as well. I think he was probably a lot more interesting.
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah.
don't know why we all felt that we were respectful of that. We were like, well, of course. We're not monsters.
It just feels really true.
I don't know if that's offensive or...
Or some people might be like, preach, sister. Finally, a podcast that's not afraid to tell the truth.
Hey, Blood, he really started to get... He got dull after his castration.
I didn't like his stand-up post-castration. I felt like it was derivative. I feel like he couldn't get it going.
God, imagine our secret Santas. Particularly with the cost of Dangerous Liaisons.
You know what you'd all get? You'd all get oranges, because they'd be like, what a delightful exotic gift. I'll take back that Mont Blanc pen now.
Citrus. Citrus and penicillin.
You know what? At least one of them had syphilis, so direly needed. Yeah. Merry Christmas from all of us here. We'll always have Paris. So now it's time for the love story in a very special series of 2 episodes. Chris is going to tell us about Napoleon's second major relationship. So, Num Num, take it away.
Yeah, this is the womb's side of the story. But as I said before we started, it actually gets a lot better for the womb. I'm not going to call her that. That's ridiculous. I was also...
You've already been cancelled 4 times.
Hey, womb. Yeah, get over here.
Hey, womb, and Num Num. Yeah. You up?
I don't think I can go on from that. Like... So something else I also said just before we started was that for some reason that now completely escapes me is that I did a whole load of research about the Holy Roman Empire as well, which I thought would be super relevant to this podcast. And I'm going to try and condense 1,000 years of history and 3 pages of notes into maybe 2 sentences. I don't know.
Can I try? Charlemagne, 3 sons. Francia, something... Germany? I don't know. Okay.
It sounds like a crossword clue for which the answer is the Holy Roman Empire. So the reason that I did want to bring it up is because Mary Louise, who is Napoleon's second wife, was the daughter of the person who was, I guess, the last Holy Roman Emperor.
Good title for a movie.
Ridley Scott is on.
I don't even know who that was. We all know Charlemagne.
He was Francis II.
Fitting denouement to the Holy Roman Empire.
I only think about Francis I.
deposed by, obviously, or forced to resign, whatever, by Napoleon because of his actions. But I mean, and this is, it's like a big deal. So, I mean, this is the kind of the background that she's coming from is the collapse of this enormous thing, which has been one of the most powerful polities in Europe for a millennia. And to an extent was something that Napoleon himself was kind of referencing when he crowned himself emperor. Well, I'm just going to kind of carry on another kind of caveat here. We're just going to talk about being an emperor in general.
I hear nice work if you can get it.
Nice work, yeah.
Yeah, I would do it.
If you can get it. Yeah. I think that's the tricky part.
So emperor being obviously what Napoleon crowned himself, it's recognized as the absolute highest monarchic rank, basically. You're more important than a king if you're an emperor.
Yeah, plus at this point, I mean, we're still talking about, I mean, this point, somewhere between 1800 and 1800. at this point, basically, you know, history. there are so many, principalities and, you know, small kingdoms in Germany and Italy that haven't been united yet.
Right.
The unification of both of those comes in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. So, basically, being a prince is nothing. Being a king is, little bit more than nothing.
But basically, dime a dozen.
You want the big job, the big boss.
That's it. Yeah.
Which is why Napoleon wants to crown himself emperor. and why it obviously smarted Francis II something awful that Napoleon stopped him from being the Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire in 1806.
The other thing is, too, that he couldn't, like, he probably would have gone to king if they hadn't just had the revolution. It was like 10 years of being like, no more king. You know?
That's also a very fair point.
And even Napoleon was like, you know what? Ear to the ground. I feel like we're not hot on kings.
So you're saying you want an emperor, right? That's what you want.
Because that's mega different, guys, okay? Like, I swear to God, I'm not going to do, oh my, ow, like, Louis. Like,
I don't want a king either.
Oh my God, it's like so disgusting and it's like so gauche and I'm so not interested. You're dead.
Yeah, just terrible optics. Let's bring Mary Louise into the picture then. You know, she's born to, as I said, Francis II, and his second wife, Maria Theresa of Naples and Sicily, in 1791. So just
got the Italian connection.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's pretty international. Like, that's one of those things that
they were
back in the day. So this is 1791 that she's born, and it's in Vienna. So, I mean, all the way through her childhood, like, the French Revolution has been going on, and you imagine, like, a royal family in the 1790s, the French Revolution's going on. People are not going to be saying nice things about the French.
I mean, have people ever, but...
Right, but this time they had, like...
Yeah.
Well, I guess we always have reason to not be nice. Never mind. Don't cut that, though.
She was also the great-granddaughter of an empress called Maria Theresa through both of her parents.
Right. That's how it worked back then.
Yeah, well, particularly...
I mean, to this day.
The takeaway, the Habsburgs, who were running the Holy Roman Empire, pretty inbred. Like, that's the... They even had something called the famous Habsburg jaw, which I think
was... The Habsburg
was
nose, isn't it?
I thought it was the Habsburg jaw was what I read. I mean, they probably had the nose as well. Like,
it was all kind of one and the same at a certain point,
just
you know?
Sort of the nose
that was
went
the problem.
Straight into the jaw.
Depending on which angle you looked at them.
And the other point is that Mary Louise was basically brought up to hate France and the French.
Okay.
Like, so already we're starting off, it's not a great, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a great match between her and Napoleon. And her hatred was even further kind of like, you know, even further pushed by her grandmother, whose sister was Marie Antoinette. So, I mean...
Not feeling that sympathetic, I imagine.
Yeah,
yeah, and then you've got to consider that, like, Napoleon himself, who, yeah, good point, Corsican, but he had spent, like, much of kind of, like, the latter part of her life up until this point kind of, like, doling it out to Austria and the Holy Roman Empire on a pretty kind of regular basis.
And at this point, Napoleon definitely considered himself French. Like,
yeah,
really. I mean, like, when you become the Emperor of France, Corsica's like, okay, sweetie. Bye.
So, yeah, initially, romance is not really in the air. Mm-hmm. However, like, as the daughter of, like, any royal family in Europe at that time, she really understood that she had a role to play. Like, her entire life was being spent kind of, like, trying to make her a marriageable prospect, mm-hmm. effectively. To that end...
That's what I've done, but I speak French, I play the piano, I do embroidery. So far, one interest?
I know, you're really 10 out of 10. I
can ride a horse.
Can I say something? I think you're overqualified to be like this. I'm looking at our applications.
That's
here.
That's the rejection I keep getting. You are overqualified for the role of wife.
You've been able to read and write for too long.
Arguably underqualified, though, in not being related to a Habsburg, or is that...
Prove it.
So Mary Louise, she probably could embroider, ride a horse. She spoke English, French, Latin, and... sorry. She spoke English, French...
I'm the only one who gets to speak Latin.
I was like, did you go to Boston Latin School?
No, you speak Boston Latin.
That's the only time I've heard of that.
Like, I really wanted to do Latin with, like, a Boston accent, but I can't do either.
Italian and Spanish were the other two there that she spoke.
I speak all of those but Latin.
Yeah, same.
Nobody speaks Latin.
So, but, you know, making things worse, the Austrians you know, even after they lost loads of wars against Napoleon and the Holy Roman Empire had been dissolved.
I really thought it just took the one.
No, there were loads of wars. It just sort of, I mean, well, a couple, like there was the one kind of in 1806, and then they started fighting the French again in, this is the Austrians, started fighting the French again in 1809. They lost again. The French came all the way to Vienna, and Mary Louise was forced to like run away from Vienna in the kind of cover of night and, you know, fleeing off to Budapest, like struggling through the wind and the rain.
Being like, I have no womb.
I have no womb.
Right, because he wants her womb.
Oh, yes. Well, he didn't at this stage. He didn't know he was going to marry her at this stage. This is still when she's a... she's only... she's 18 at this stage. Napoleon has not decided that he's going to marry her right at this second. He's still unhappily married to Josephine when he's busy invading Austria and, you know, conquering them and stuff like that. So 1809, Mary Louise has fled Vienna. Napoleon is occupying it. This is the year when Napoleon went through in his life around kind of between 20 to 30 assassination attempts. Obviously, a lot of people didn't like him.
understatement.
And one of these was a German university student called Friedrich Staps in 1809 when Napoleon was in Vienna and occupying it. And this is an important thing in terms of his divorcing of Josephine and his latter marriage to Mary Louise. But anyway, which I'll get to in a second. But so Friedrich Staps tried to kill Napoleon, as I understand, very poorly. He sort of... basically, he was just found...
I mean, it's kind of a binary outcome, isn't it? You go for the king, you better not miss.
Yeah, hello?
He was just found kind of like walking near him with a big knife in his coat. And then...
I mean, it's an occupational hazard, isn't it? Being emperor.
Yeah, what being, you know, assassination attempts. I think particularly if you're Napoleon and you're busy pissing off a lot of people by, you know, destroying the Holy Roman Empire and stuff like that.
like, I am your government now.
They fucking hate that, yeah.
I'm mentioning it. Maybe this is really interesting. So the interesting thing is that he really... he owned up to wanting to assassinate him. It was obviously non-provable, but he was like, yeah, I definitely wanted to kill Napoleon. Mm-hmm. And then there is a reported dialogue between him and Napoleon, which I will read, which I think is one of those things which is only interesting because it's Napoleon asking the questions. But here
and it
we go.
Comes from the time period.
Like, yeah, from the time period. This was like court documents.
Oh.
So he's talking to his supposed assassin. He says, you know, where were you born? He says where he was born. What is your father, Protestant minister? How old are you? I am 18 years of age. What did you intend to do with the knife? To kill you. You are a mad young man. You are an Illuminato.
Oh my God.
That schooling really did a good job.
Italian.
One panino, one Illuminato.
But I love that this goes back this far.
Yeah. Beyonce's like, shut up. No, we're not.
Demron's like,
Napoleon being the original conspiracy theorist as well. Like,
he would be. Oh, God, he'd be
He's like, you are an Opus Dei, no? Yeah.
If he lived now, he'd be a 9/11 truther. He'd be such a conspiracy theorist.
But he's in charge of everything. I mean, whatever. That doesn't stop them. Like,
yeah, Josephine would have to be like, nah.
Mm. I mean, from Napoleon and Josephine, I get a real Donald Trump, Melania Trump vibe.
Yeah. Oh, don't say that about Josephine. Give her someone cooler.
But honestly, that like, you know, like the glares, the coldness.
Oh, I know.
Anyway, the Friedrich Staps goes on, I am not mad and I know not what it is you mean by an Illuminato. You're sick then. I am not sick. On the contrary, I am in good health. Why did you wish to assassinate me? Because you have caused the misfortunes of my country. And so it goes on. Anyway, it's just fascinating, I think, because we've got Napoleon just speaking in kind of real time, calling people Illuminatos.
I'm going to call everybody I know Illuminato now.
Illuminato. Illuminato. It's not Illuminatus.
Oh, I mean, but is it because it's direct address? No question. Like, seriously, seriously, is that why it's Illuminato?
Yeah, this is why they all come. Welcome to Eat Your Vegetables Night, because okay. We'll always have Paris.
I just want everyone to know that there might be a conjugation situation here, but wait.
Anyway, the point is that after he escaped this assassination attempt, and after that scintillating conversation, which we've all shared in.
In what language? Did he speak German?
I have no idea. I mean, I assume they'd be speaking French, I would guess. Like, that was the lingua franca at the time. Yeah. Like, he decided this is when he thought, like, he needs to do something to really cement the empire, cement his succession. Mm-hmm. Josephine, I'm sure that there are kind of, like, different... I'm saying, like, this is like a kind of like 100% historical fact. This is one reading of the history that this assassination attempt happened. Napoleon decided that, hey, I've got to kind of think about my legacy, got mm-hmm. to think about like having a kid. So, you know, and Josephine really had not been able to have a kid by that stage. So, right. You know, we talked about it last week. If you haven't listened to it, I suggest going back and listening to it now, and then you'll be completely caught up to speed.
You'll know everything.
He begins his proceedings. Well, he's beginning the proceedings to divorce Josephine. His intent is to marry the youngest sister of the Tsar of Russia, who, you know, were previously allied with the Austrians. It's all there in the film.
The documentary.
Yeah, the documentary made by Sir Ridley Scott.
It's on Apple TV at this point, I imagine.
although the Austrians and the Russians were ostensive allies at that stage, the Austrians were pretty worried about the idea of Napoleon marrying Russian royalty.
Well, yeah, because they're like, get to Russia.
So Russia's on
how
one side.
How are you going to go?
Yeah, we're nervous. We don't like it.
I mean, my feeling is they've already been knocked about. They've already been conquered. Like, I feel that, like, they shouldn't be worried anymore. But anyway, they are. In any case, the Russians delay any kind of marriage possibilities between Napoleon and the Tsarina. Is that what you call it?
I have an unsold novel about the Russian
And so instead, the Austrians kind of leap in there and start negotiating. I mean, we call it a love story. There's a lot of negotiations and politics that begin it, I suppose.
Love is a many splendor thing.
Yeah, exactly. So the Austrians
You know what really gets me about that is I know you were quoting from Moulin Rouge.
No, it wasn't.
Actual song.
No, it wasn't.
The marriage contract gets signed without Mary Louise knowing about it. And then when she is actually informed, she replies, I wish only what my duty commands me to wish.
Oh, okay. Mary Louise.
Well,
I know. That's.
I mean, better for her.
No, of course. That's like literally her job. I understand. But for some reason, I'm like, you couldn't give us like a spirited reply as well, you know? A little.
I mean, she's 19 years old. Like,
so, Josephine would have had us.
Josephine would have done. She'd have done it.
Josephine grew up in like Sugar Shack. She has had a different life.
The untold cousin to Shake Shack. We're still waiting to get that off the ground. But
TM. TM.
Yeah, TM.
They get married by proxy then in Vienna, so which is...
Sorry, can you imagine that being your job?
but does that mean like there are two people who stand in for Napoleon and Mary Louise and they're like, I do,
one person who's standing in for Napoleon. Mary Louise is actually there. It's in Vienna. Napoleon is represented by Archduke Charles, who is Mary Louise's uncle, which is sort of quite... In keeping with the whole kind of Habsburg tradition.
Of course.
Okay, you're going to get married, but first you have to get pretend married to your uncle.
But it's a pretend, okay? It's pretend Mary Louise.
But there were, you know, this
she's
proxy...
Like, I'm just along for the ride.
Yeah, she's like, honestly...
Me and my womb.
Yeah. But it's sort of weird to think about it. So the marriage, even this proxy marriage, was kind of hugely celebrated in Vienna at the time. Like, I mean, hugely celebrated. Like, there were big parties for it. But if you think, like, it's not like today when you're actually seeing, like, you don't have the video footage of the of the marriage. I mean, you just hear Napoleon and
Mary Lou's have got married. Did you promise to obey or not?
And just imagine, like, the royal weddings that we've seen that have been televised. Like, imagine if it was, like, you know, Princess Diana and this...
and her uncle.
And her uncle. Or for some reason, I was thinking of, like, a cardboard cutout of Charles. Well, what?
It's like at the end of Four Weddings and a Funeral, and they like, joke that what's-her-name ends up with Prince Charles, but, like, it's very clearly her in a cardboard cutout.
But very quickly, like, so, I mean, obviously, Mary Louise was not the only person who hated the French in Austria at this time.
Nope.
Like, a lot of Austrians were not too keen on the French after all of the years of war and kind of defeat that they'd inflicted. But, like...
Just a spoiler alert, there's a happy ending to this. I was actually at my Austrian friend's going away party a few years ago when she went back to Austria from France. And the French ambassador, the Austrian ambassador... came to her, but she just randomly had sent an email to his office inviting him to her goodbye party on a boat. And he came to her goodbye party on a boat.
Oh, so
because
forgiven.
There's so little French-Austrian animosity to deal with.
Well, I mean, exactly.
That is good news.
I know, everybody can just breathe a sigh. Relax your jaws, babe. Yes.
I mean, I was going to get that. I mean, it was going to happen even sooner than you thought. I mean, things got bad again after this. But actually, like, immediately what I'm saying is that, like, after all of this hatred, the marriage happened and the Austrians are like, ah, you know, Napoleon's not so bad after all. Like, you know, a royal wedding does wonders for, you know, public relations, basically.
Yeah.
I mean,
until the memoir comes out. Yeah.
Until you move to California.
But I think what is interesting about it is that it's not so, like, I think looking into Napoleonic history, and this is a little bit of an aside, is really interesting because it's like, it's surprisingly similar to, like, today. And you kind of, like, associate it because it's just before we have photographs and before, you know, the modern age really, really gets going.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, there's so much stuff about it and people are reacting very similarly to how they would have done today to this thing, which is like, oh, wow, like, you know, our queen has, or our princess has married the emperor. We've been chosen. This is fantastic. We love the French. Like,
that's so true. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure it was more detailed than that at the time.
Longer news cycles.
But anyway, back to Mary Louise, who after this proxy marriage did obviously leave Austria to go off to France. When she arrived in France, she went through the same ritual that Marie Antoinette did, which is apparently...
made famous by the Sofia Coppola film.
She should take off everything she brought with her.
Leave behind all the Austrian garb.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently, this, I looked around for further evidence of this. I don't know when this tradition began, but the idea is that when a queen married into the French royal family, that she wouldn't be allowed to take any of her own possessions, most importantly, her clothes, mm-hmm. with
her.
Did
they take
into
away
France.
Her dog, like Marie Antoinette in the movie?
That was a very touching
so
moment.
Sad.
I mean,
really did like that.
I'm sure it was tough for Mary Louise,
I think
whatever
so.
Happened. So she took all of her clothes off and had to step naked across the French border.
Wasn't as bad as having to fuck Napoleon, which came shortly thereafter. She had to take off all of her clothes and fuck Napoleon.
But that is so crazy to me that, like, in this time of, incredible decorum and rituals, that at some point there's just a naked lady who's like, sorry guys, I just gotta get across that border.
French now.
Yeah.
I also think, like, I mean,
they also make the immigration process way harder now.
Yeah, in a way, I would like to just hop across to get a citizenship.
Didn't have full body scanners at that stage.
Yeah.
With your arms up in the, like,
yeah,
deer in the headlight position, yeah.
But I do think, I mean, like, the France of the French Revolution was a pretty wild place. And obviously we're a little bit beyond the French Revolution now. But I think... I think obviously here they're kind of repeating a real traditional custom, but there's probably a degree that they were repeating it in this sort of slightly kind of like nouveau riche way, yes. I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And like anything goes. Yeah, get naked, bring her across the border. You know, it's a right. real wedding. I don't know. It feels like the spirit of the age is very kind of like drunk at about 12 in the evening, thinking that you can do anything.
That's it. We're going to break everything down and we're going to fix it this time. No, but seriously, yeah. not like the last time, guys. We're fixing it this time. Yeah.
So the first person who she met from Napoleon's family was Napoleon's sister, who then made Mary Louise take a bath to really wash
all scrub that Austria off her.
Wash all of the Austria yeah. off her.
I think this is the sister who hated Josephine as well. She was famous.
She's like, I'm in. I got it. Yeah. Gimme.
Then, you know, after all of the Austria has been scrubbed off her, she's been dressed in French bridal clothes, and she meets Napoleon in Compiègne, which is just outside of Paris. I went there, actually, not in terms of the...
Did you get the Austria scrubbed off you? Is it like a pilgrimage site now?
Good for you, honestly. Not many would admit to having Austria on them, but...
So the Schwarzwald torte that's all over your body.
The point is, Compiègne is not so far out of Paris. There's a really lovely chateau there, and that's where she first meets Napoleon and where they get married. When they actually see one another. When she first meets Napoleon, her comment is, "You're much better looking than your portrait." So there you go. That's positive. Things are looking up for Mary Louise and Napoleon.
I think they sent the ugly uncle, and she was just imagining like this whole time.
That was smart. Yeah, that was very smart of
them.
That's
what I would have done.
And did Napoleon say anything back, like anything complimentary?
I don't know.
The historical record doesn't show. Okay,
I said hello.
Well, that's true. So at this stage, he probably isn't going to be. He might have been polite, but at this stage,
he misses Josephine. He left someone that he liked, loved, obsessed over.
Yeah. He is literally in Napoleon's mind. He is marrying a whim. He's wanting to carry on his empire. Right. Anyway, they get married in a civil ceremony in Compiègne in 1810.
Because we didn't get to this, but the Pope wouldn't have divorced Napoleon and Josephine, so they were only civilly separated but still married in the eyes of the church.
It was annulled. It wasn't even a divorce.
Oh, that's right.
It was an annulment. It never happened. Here is the whitest snow.
Because I think that
it's a freebie. yeah.
Presumably the wedding by proxy would have been a religious one, I would have thought.
I think so. And I have to believe that at this point he would have gotten religiously married at some point with her.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten the annulment part because it's been a week. Yeah. Of course. We don't do these in marathon sessions.
That would be insane.
So anyway, so Vienna have had their party. Now it's Paris's turn to have their party. Like, you know, I mean, any excuse for a party, right? And who doesn't love a royal / weird emperor something wedding?
Look, you got to give them up something to do. Yeah.
It's true. This is Rachel's update of the Prince by Matthew Belli. This included a massive firework display. I just like this because, by renowned pyrotechnician Claude Ruggieri. I think we should put a pin in renowned pyrotechnician Claude Ruggieri, see if he's been in love with somebody and whether there's a story to tell about him.
I bet there are.
There's going to be way too many puns from you too. And were there fireworks?
Just that pun, really. So I think this is a kind of a fun, weird quirk or detail that by... marrying Mary Louise, Napoleon becomes the great nephew-in-law of Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette.
Oh.
So there you go. It just ties everything together. You know, like the French Revolution, they really tried to get out of that royalist thing.
God, they did.
And then Napoleon's just thrown himself way back in there. Stitching those lines back together again.
And not for lack of murder trying. I mean, they really killed fucking everybody. And yet somehow those fucking...
You're so right. Like,
he did the best they could. Didn't get the foreigners.
Yeah, exactly.
Or we'll just fly one in.
They really left nothing to chance. And yet, a few slipped through.
Yeah, royals are like cockroaches. But Mary Louise, like, you know, despite these sort of like maybe inauspicious beginnings and all that, like, she settles in fairly quickly to the French court. She's quite quiet. She doesn't ruffle too many feathers. People generally quite like her. And even Napoleon starts to, you know, really kind of warm to her. He, like, in his words, spared no pains to please her. And he even said at a certain point that he preferred her to Josephine.
No!
Yeah? Yeah? Well, there was a reason for this.
Oh, okay. I bet she wasn't as mouthy.
Well, I mean, I think the reason really speaks for itself. It's like, Josephine had a lot of affairs.
Okay. And, what's your point?
When you bring in a 19-year-old foreigner, they know fewer people to
What
fuck.
Other hobbies is she supposed to, you know, develop at this point?
Embroidery, horseback riding, French.
It's no judgment on Josephine, but I can understand why Napoleon might have, in some respects, preferred Mary Louise, who he described as, with her, there was never a lie, never a debt.
I feel like the debt is really much older than Josephine back
then. I think that Josephine owed quite a lot of money.
Josephine never stopped owing money. No, Josephine was really... I mean, I'm Team Josephine all the way.
Yeah.
I would never lend her money if I were... I mean, she'd be my best friend of all time, but...
I mean, I don't hate her for it. At a certain point, are you also just like, send the bills to my husband, the emperor.
Yeah.
To be fair, like, that's a pretty solid kind of, like, credit
that's
rating.
That's so true. There's your 750 of the 1800s.
I would
what does it go to? I don't even know.
I would have bought another palace. I would have been like, well, you know what, bitch? I guess I am going to do a petit, a moyen, and a grand. Thank you.
Mary Louise seemed to quite like Napoleon as well. She wrote a letter to her dad saying, I can only think of this in a French accent, but I suppose it would have been Austrian. I assure you, dear Papa, that people have done great injustice to the Emperor.
No, it's quite German, that. Mine was actually Austrian.
I mean, the only Austrian accent I know is Arnold Schwarzenegger's, so I assure you, dear Papa, that people have done great injustice to the Emperor. The better one knows him, the better one appreciates and loves him.
That is what I wanted.
We'll speed that up in the... that will...
right.
So basically she's saying that Napoleon, actually, the better you get to know him, the nicer he is.
But obviously this is also what her father wants to hear.
That is very true.
Right. Imagine her being like, he's not that nice.
Yeah. Like, what's he going to do? Daddy, I need a war.
But also, I mean, like, but her kind of like saying that she was happy in the relationship, that improves relationships between France and Austria. Like this. So it's all going very, very well.
She's good at her job.
Yeah. And she's not only good at that part of her job, but she gets pregnant as well. The womb delivers. Like,
leave.
I didn't mean that as a pun.
I'm sure you didn't. He has it in bold.
So in 1810, she gets pregnant so that's fairly soon after they've got married. So it happens all pretty quickly. And then gives birth to a boy called, another kind of very dynastic name, Napoleon François Joseph Charles Bonaparte.
Damn. I wonder if Joseph was somehow for Josephine.
His favorite brother was named Joseph as well, so he was obsessed with Joseph as a name.
Okay. Yeah, and which is probably why he called Josephine.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really...
Yeah. So apparently it was quite a difficult birth, though, and Napoleon was present for it. He wasn't just like away on campaign, he was there. And this is what he wrote about it. She screamed horribly. I am not naturally soft-hearted, yet I was much moved when I saw how she suffered. The Empress had thought herself lost. She had persuaded herself that her life was to be sacrificed to save that of the child, but I had given orders quite to the contrary. Well, I mean, like, it's a big turnaround from like his.
I thought he meant like he told her like you cannot die, you're not allowed to die.
That's how
No, but like he was actually saying like if it comes to the baby or her,
if it comes to the baby or her, he was like no, save her, not the baby.
That's interesting. I mean, like I don't mean to be. I am a little bit cynical, but I do wonder if that was the case, just because him having an heir was so important that I do. It, not even about his own emotional choice, but would he have had to? I don't know. I wonder if it was like she was able to survive, and so he was able to kind of say that in the aftermath. But really, at the end of the day, if it was between his son and her, I think that the burdens of the job were that he would have had to be like, yeah, save the kid.
But it's also it's tricky because she's super young. She's potential.
She could have
like
more,
you know, like
kids,
how many how many descendants of the Holy Roman Empire can you get on short notice?
I think you could. There's also a degree to which like. On Napoleon's side, I think he was an emotional, romantic guy.
Oh, no, for sure.
Like, and I think, like, you know, in the moment, maybe intellectually, obviously he was somebody who could probably kind of fight through the emotions of a moment and do the rational thing, probably. I mean, he is Napoleon. Like, I think I'm going to take his word for it and say that he was definitely moved. And he didn't have to have necessarily have said these things.
Right, sure.
The reports go on. That after he'd sort of like been congratulated by everybody present, he went on to announce like the birth of his son around the palace, but everybody remarked on how kind of like impacted he was by the sort of having seen Mary Louise giving birth, and like, you know, and he said himself at that stage that he would have preferred being in a battle day.
Well, because I was thinking, you know, at this point he's seen a lot of men suffering, but has he ever seen a woman in this anything like this?
Right. His quote afterwards was, "I had rather never have any more children than see her suffer so much again." I mean, it's who knows, he might be saying that for PR, but you know,
But listen, he didn't have to say that for PR. Like he was the emperor of this time period. This is going above and beyond. I am inclined to believe that no matter what might have been the actual decision making that happened, I believe that he was really moved by her suffering.
Yeah.
And it must. And to your point, Rachel, like how many times has he actually seen a woman suffer?
Yeah.
Like kind of through physical pain.
Yeah.
So baby Napoleon, Napoleon Junior, was given the title the King of Rome. which, by the way, was actually kind of like a tradition which the Holy Roman emperors used to do for their kids. So it's kind of like Napoleon laying claim to the practice of being a Holy Roman emperor. Kind of that sort of him laying claim to Charlemagne, laying claim to that old Roman empire. Mm-hmm. Like so anyway. They're together for a while. She, Mary Louise, comes with Napoleon to Dresden in 1812 to wave him off on his campaign against Russia. By the way, I guess Russia declared war against France.
I think so.
Yeah. I think it was one of those kind of like interesting things about Napoleon that he never actually declared war on anyone.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of the time was all of these countries always used to be declaring war on him, but that's probably kind of special pleading. Like
I'm gonna guess mixture.
Like, yeah, I think like he definitely.
The more countries you invade, the more people are like,
me too. I hate you too. Yeah.
So anyway, the point is that after Russia declared war on France, France invaded Russia. It didn't go well. We know that already, right? Like it's
The old joke of never start a land war in Russia, isn't that something like that?
Yeah.
Napoleon with the Grand Army. This is the beginning of the end for Napoleon. Really, he after such promising beginnings, he invades Russia. This is also featured in the Ridley Scott film
at great length,
and loses.
Yeah, it does not go
Do we well. Need any more details? No. I mean, like...
It's bad. It's...
Let's say, you know...
They're ill-equipped for the terrain. It's the Sarah's Vietnam.
Yeah, the Russians, they retreat, and do a kind of scorched earth policy as the French are advancing towards Moscow. So there's no...
you want it? Take it.
So there's no land for the French to get any food off of as they're going forward. And then eventually they make it to Moscow. And the Russians have done the same thing with Moscow. They've just left it and set it on fire. And so, yeah, like Napoleon wins, kind of, but it's like a real Pyrrhic victory. Mm-hmm. Like, and the famous,
almost, yeah,
the famous battle in this time is the Battle of Borodino, which I think features in War and Peace, right?
Like, yes. That's,
and we know that we lost because there's no subway station here named after.
The thing is, this is a bit like the French Revolution. There is so much history in between all of the history that we sort of know about, like, mm-hmm. you know, like Napoleon invades Russia and then mysteriously Napoleon is no longer king of France or emperor of France.
Right.
And you know, you guys have just opened up another Word document. No, just kidding.
But the point is that after the failed invasion of Russia, stuff happens. The countries of Europe unite against Napoleon once again, and this time they succeed in kicking him out.
Led by our hero.
No, this is not yet. This is not.
Oh, yeah, that's
like,
later.
This is later. Like,
two exiles, baby.
During this time, so in fact, the countries allied against France in this time are called the Sixth Coalition, which Austria stays out of on this occasion to begin with because of Mary Louise trying to sort of like, you know, saying like, right. don't invade. Like, look, I'm married to the Emperor of France. She can't quite convince Austria to ally with France. France like, are a losing bet at this stage.
They're like, we're hearing all sides, but we're not choosing a side.
And then eventually Austria do join the opposition to France. And yeah, Napoleon gets forced out. The last time that Napoleon ever embraces Marie-Louise is the 25th of January, 1814, at 3 o'clock in the morning. He gives her a hug and his son, and then he goes off and loses a battle, and then he's exiled to Elba. And Elba is an island in the Mediterranean.
Yeah.
And he's got quite a lot of power on Elba. He's doing all right on Elba.
He's the little emperor of Elba.
He's got a decent retinue. In fact, like, when Napoleon has his time on Elba, he really improves, like, all of the things about Elba. Like, Elba's roads, sewage system. It's entirely true. Like,
no, it's true. Yeah. But what I'm laughing about is just that, like, Napoleon can't help himself. They're like, just be cool. Okay? He's like, wait, what? He's already, like, creating traffic
He's,
lights.
Like, holding a crown. Like,
yeah. Oh my God, how did this get in here? Crazy.
Don't mind if I do.
Meanwhile, like, Mary Louise, to begin with, like, so is reluctant to leave Paris. This is, we're going kind of confusing in time here, but like, so Napoleon has been defeated. He hasn't yet been sent to Elba. This is sort of still the armies kind of coming down into Paris. Mary Louise doesn't want to leave Paris because she's like, she's got loyalty towards Napoleon at that stage. And she's also like thinking, well, if they dethrone Napoleon, then who are they going to put in charge? I've got this son who's mm-hmm. little Napoleon Jr. That's not going to confuse anything. There's a lot of honor. So to begin with, she doesn't want to leave, but eventually is convinced to leave when she hears a message from Napoleon, not sent to her, sent to somebody else, which says, I would prefer to know that the Empress and the King of Rome are both at the bottom of the Seine rather than in the hands of the foreigners. So she does leave. She goes to Blois, in fact.
Wow. Okay.
That wasn't just a noise he made, that's the actual name of the
Blois.
City.
Good clarification. Wow, I wonder why.
That's just somewhere in the Loire. It's sort of nice, isn't it?
Like,
Blois.
Yeah,
lots of castles. She feels at home.
Oh. And she doesn't go to Elba, you know, famously. Like, all of her advisors are like, don't go. I mean, it's a really complicated position that she's in Europe at this stage, in the, like, you know, the alliance that she got married in order to forge has now broken down.
But also, like, how much of a push you need? Don't go to Elba. Okay.
Yeah. You guys are probably,
I twist
right.
my arm. Yeah.
On top of that, Josephine has recently died, and this is one of the things which is stopping her from going to Elba, because she's heard from people who probably don't want her to go to Elba that Napoleon is just distraught about the death of Josephine. Mm. So don't go there. It's like, it's a bad time. You're not going to, like,
he's not in the mood.
Josephine's died. Sad about Russia. I mean, like, It's like being in alive in 2020, like 2023. What am I talking about? Like, eventually she goes back to Austria for a little bit, in which time her grandmother, who's the sister of Marie Antoinette, by the way, is in Austria, really disapproving of the fact that she hasn't gone to like see Napoleon in Elba. She's like, what terrible wife you are. Why didn't you go to Elba and like hang out with Napoleon?
Well, Marie Antoinette went, you can say a lot of things about her, but she did go all the way.
It's true. Yeah. So Marie Louise is really upset now because she's like, she feels that all of you, like, she's in an impossible position, effectively. It's like, you know, she's damned if she does go to Elba, right. She's damned if she doesn't go to Elba.
And it's also like people like Marie Louise always end up in these situations where they have to make impossible decisions, right? Yeah. Even if you've been, you know, studying statecraft and political science for decades, this is a really tough choice, right? Like, I have no idea what the next few years are going to hold. And it just seems ludicrous and ridiculous to me.
Do you know who would have helped her? Island Witch.
Island Witch would have been like, let me do your fortune. But, you know, it just seems crazy. Like, no one prepares these women. And then at these critical moments, everyone's like, oh, you've got to make a really important choice. And basically, Empire is like, you know, at your beck and call. What do you think? I don't know, bitch. All I know how to do is embroider and read like five words. Yeah. You've not done a great job preparing me.
It's all right, though, because in the end, her kind of, not to say that her decision is made for her, but a little bit of conniving in the background from the kind of the Austrian upper crust, who, like, Emperor Francis, her dad, sends her off to Aix-les-Bains with this guy, Count Adam Albert von Nieberg. Who's a, like, let's just call him a bit of a rakish Austrian.
Yeah, he sounds
Now was like immediately in.
But
like,
yeah, I'm into an Adam.
With real instructions, like, just seduce Mary Louise.
What, just for fun?
Like, yeah, well, his real instructions are stop her from going to Elba. Oh. But the kind of the subtle, like, subtle things are like, you know, seduce her.
She's looking, like, around the court like, who's hot?
What a great place for her.
And he's recorded as having written, inside of 6 months, I shall be her lover and soon her husband.
Little dangerous liaisons action going on here.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he didn't even need 6 months.
Of course he did it.
A couple of weeks in Aix-les-Bains.
What a hottie.
Shall we take some waters? Yes, let's take some waters. There's a cool picture of him. He's got an eye patch. He's a kind of former...
I am on the floor. Wow.
Honestly, I think the eye patch was implied when you said Austrian count. Like,
yeah. Austrian count named Adam? Yeah.
So, I mean, they fall in love. They have 3 children together. I mean, obviously not within 6 months. That would be crazy.
Even for Adam.
Even for Adam Albert von Nieberg. Nieberg.
Wait, you know what? She was fertile.
Yeah. And then we have the sort of the famous, like, Napoleon escapes from Elba.
Yes.
In 1815.
I thought so.
There is, like, and this is shown in the film. This is very true. Like, he escapes. It's one of the many dramatic things that happen in Napoleon's life. But he's sort of making his way back up through France. And they get kind of, like, he gets cut off by a section of the French army, and he walked up in front of the French army, who all have their guns leveled at him, and he shows them the medals on his chest and says, come on, you're not going to shoot me, effectively, you're going to join me. And he's, you know, this exile, he doesn't have any power. They should shoot him by all the laws in the land, but instead they put their guns up and they're like, yay, Napoleon, what could go wrong? To cut a very long story short, I'm just going to say Waterloo.
Like, not the ABBA song. It's, not yet.
This part of Napoleon is really like the final, like the not even the final act in the film. It's like you've had the final act and then it's just tack on this sort of extra, right, like Yeah, let's get all the gang back together again for like the big, big battle.
The Christmas special of battles.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It is the Christmas special of battles.
When I saw Rupert Everett, I was like, okay, we're going to be here for a while.
Does he play the Duke?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm seeing it now.
Yeah.
That's perfect casting. Perfect. I really know the Duke's face.
As an aside, in the film, I think the Battle of Waterloo is the only really, really good part of that film, in my opinion. But, you know.
You didn't like when you are the British. Boy goes, 21 sex.
That was also pretty good. And the whole film is British propaganda. It's like,
it really is.
It's look how silly the French are. Look how silly their greatest ever person was.
Really is. That's the thesis statement.
And the Duke of Wellington is so cool as well.
He's having breakfast. He's being very calm. Yeah.
I mean, publish and be damned, bitches. Yeah. I can't stop myself from saying bitches after every sentence on this podcast.
So anyway, Napoleon loses a second time and is exiled a second time to St. Helena, which is a tiny, tiny island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. Mm. Back to Mary Louise. So importantly, like, she did not... I don't know how big a thing this was. Like, she was asked by her stepmother to join in processions to pray for the success of the Austrian armies against Napoleon the second time, but refused, I think. Like, yeah, she refused doing that.
I mean, it's all, like, there's no upside for her, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, and she says of this, I hope you will understand of Napoleon. I hope he will understand the misery of my position. I shall never assent to a divorce, but I flatter myself that he will not oppose an amicable separation and that he will not bear any ill feeling toward me. The separation has become imperative. It will in no way affect the feelings of esteem and gratitude that I preserve. I mean, this is really like marriage as a it's a weird melding of politics and emotion.
Exactly. Like, you have to acknowledge that there are some emotions there, but at the end of the day, you know... Ulster, love, and empire. You
know? What I want to know is the dynamics between Napoleon Jr. and the other three kids.
Yes, I would love to know.
There's your movie.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, Napoleon Jr. Maybe, like, he was quite estranged from Mary Louise. He he had obviously going to be a difficult life trying to live up to Napoleon being your dad.
Right, ultimate Nepo baby.
What, a Napo baby? Yeah.
No, I didn't, and you know I didn't. You knew I didn't before you even opened up your mouth.
Yeah, he was, I've got actually, I do have a quote here. Yeah, she was estranged from him, and he actually preferred, maybe this isn't like, there's so much to say. I feel like we've been talking for a long time. I've barely got into, you know, the history of the Holy Roman Empire.
This is one regret of 2023.
I mean, very quickly, I will say that Mary Louise became, got made the Duchess of Parma. It's all very confusing what happens after Napoleon, because people are sort of trying to allow for certain things to happen and break conventions so that certain things can kind of be maintained. Honor can be given to people who are involved. Like, so she's still trying to be honored, basically. But she can't be honored so much. So she's made Duchess of Parma, but it's a non-transferable title. So her offspring will not...
So it's like being knighted or, like, right now.
So we think you're cool, but we don't want you to go on for too long.
And
but it's not Lady Stella McCartney.
Oh, God, no.
And similarly, she got married to, what was his name? Nepug. She got married to...
Adam Albert
von Nepug. But she couldn't transfer her titles to him.
Right.
Like, so it was a particular kind of marriage. So anyway, so kind of like her line effectively stops with her. Like, they kind of cut off that idea of, like, her transferring on. But she dies in 1847 after, you know, and there's a lot more to her life than that, but this is the Napoleon part, and that's just sort of
right.
She dies in 1847. There are, you can see photographs of her.
I'd love to do a Patreon on Adam and Mary Louise. I'm not joking. I really feel like
you are shipping this so hard.
There's definitely a really interesting relationship there.
I am in. I feel so tingly. No?
What did America do to you that all we have to do is be like, and then there was this Adam, and you're like, in.
So yeah, but you can see a photograph of her, and it reminds me of there's the kind of, I think it's the Roland Barthes thing about like when you're looking at a photograph of somebody whose eyes have looked upon Napoleon.
That's a great sentence, but it's just shit like this sometimes where I'm like, how did you come up with that? What the fuck are you talking about? You know? It sounds profound, but then think about it.
So finally, let's get to what Napoleon II said of Mary Louise. If Josephine had been my mother, my father would not have been buried at St. Helena.
Oh, come down.
And I should not be at Vienna.
Oh.
My mother is kind but weak. She was not the wife my father deserved. Josephine was.
I feel all...
Wait, you're so torn.
I know. I feel like on the one hand, yeah, of course, like, I love the honor given to Josephine, but fuck you, kid. Like, your mom had to go through a lot of shit. Like, she made tough decisions. You're alive. And you're Napoleon, too.
She was the Camilla. She stuck it out.
She did. And she's way better than Camilla. I said it first. I don't care.
So, what, Josephine is Camilla or...
No.
Mary Louise is...
Mary Louise is Camilla. Because, like,
I don't think they're either of them are Camilla. I don't think it really maps. Like,
Okay.
I don't know. There's like the spunky, you know, kind of mouthy first one.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the one who's just like, does exactly what she should.
Let's pull up the Wikipedia page for Camilla. Let's read it out loud now. just so we are all... I just want to make sure we all...
We first need some grounding in the Holy Roman Empire.
Napoleon II, though, you know, he actually died incredibly young at the age of 21 in 1832. And obviously, as referenced by him, Napoleon First had died on St. Helena, where he was exiled after getting into gardening at the age of 51 years old in 1821.
Hence why French history has as a ruler Napoleon III and not a Napoleon II. Napoleon III being the nephew. Yeah.
Right. Would not badmouth his mother so horrendously.
Ugh.
I'm so upset. I got really emotional.
But you love Josephine.
I know.
That's why she wouldn't be having emotions.
I think everybody thinks that Josephine would have been better for Napoleon than Mary Louise.
Well, sure, but Mary Louise, like, it's not her fault. She did the best she could. Mary Louise Parker, not that one. But, like, you know, like...
It's kind of the thesis of Ridley Scott in the film, though, as well, is that, like, when Napoleon divorces Josephine, that's when everything starts going wrong with him.
He's a basic bitch, though.
Ridley. That's true. I think Ridley himself would admit to that.
Would admit to that, for sure, yeah.
I'm a basic bitch. I think he said it in an interview.
All of his direct, like, you know what? That's not what this podcast is about. Never mind.
I'm just going to close with another 30 Rock quote from Liz Lemon's talk show, which is, oh, you've had some success and you think you deserve a vajayjay upgrade? Deal breaker, shut it down. And now it's time for Marry, Fuck, Kill. Chris, who are we marrying, fucking, and killing this week?
Well, for our special Christmas edition of Marry, Fuck, Kill, we're going to do exactly the same thing that we always do.
And the year with a bang.
Yeah.
And a marry and a kill.
Yeah.
And so your options for this week are France during the Ancien Régime, France during the Revolution, or Napoleonic France okay. during Napoleon's reign. It's not easy.
No.
No.
I mean, none of them are an obvious marry. I would go that far to say.
Yeah, there's a lot of obvious fucking, I think.
I mean, you know what? Like, I will say, I think in the end, I'm just going to have to go with marrying Napoleonic France. Because you know what? There are roads, there are maps,
that's true.
There are taxes, there's a working government.
Hey, we haven't really given the guy his due. He got a lot of other stuff done as well.
No, I mean,
that's what I'm a school.
Napoleon was good.
He did, yeah, he
was
did.
Was good at all the stuff that was not interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, or international battles.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he mostly was good until the... Yeah,
yeah exactly.
Except for the few.
And there's a reason why we talk about Napoleon.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'll marry France during that era. For me, the real trick is the Ancien Régime and the Revolution, because they're both very sexy eras for, like, one night.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I guess it depends on which night. I guess with the Ancien Régime...
It always depends on the
night. If I can be, like... part of the upper classes, if I get to decide who I am in this, like, if I can be at court and fancy, like, I will fuck that. If not, revolution. I guess, so in terms of who I'm fucking, it's going to depend on my class. If I'm lower class at the time, definitely going to fuck the revolution. Mm-hmm. If I'm upper class, definitely going to fuck the Ancien Régime. I guess I would have liked to be either of those at that particular moment.
Right.
You don't want to be lower class during the Ancien Régime.
Ancien Régime is real, like, you know, talking dangerous liaison stuff, though. I mean,
yeah, but only if you're upper class.
I think you're allowed to be upper class, and it's a weird fictional game that we're playing. You can choose.
Yeah, I'm never going to be upper class.
Well, I'm not going to choose to be upper class during the revolution.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Okay, it's decided for me. I'll fuck the Ancien Régime.
Okay.
And kill the revolution, just because, look, they're, like, I would not close my eyes around them, you know, so no matter whether I'm marrying or fucking them, I wouldn't trust it. They got a knife under their pillow.
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
they wild.
Ooh, do you know what you're going to do, Chris?
I think, and this is slightly being, you know, contrarian to what Rachel said, but also I'm tapping into this part of my personality. I'm going to say I will marry the French Revolution.
Yeah, that feels due.
I just kind of understood that was going to happen.
I think
we knew.
What a time to be alive.
Or dead.
If you were alive.
If you got to stay that way.
But when you stayed alive, you really felt it, right? Like, because you felt that guillotine blade just whooshing by you.
I mean,
it's supposed to be not that bad.
Yeah, totally.
So people have said.
Yeah. Really reliable witnesses here.
Bystanders said, not too bad.
But I think it must have been, I mean, as long as you weren't one of the, like, nobles up for the chop, like, the time of the French Revolution must have been so exciting. It was like, that was the original 1960s.
Hot take.
So, yeah, I think, like, for that excitement and for all of those kind of, like, late nights when, like, you're in bars and you're having conversations and they genuinely are changing the world. It's the moment, like, that all students really dream of is the French Revolution, which is, like, the things that you say get kind of translated into the real world and everything feels possible and the entire world is, like, open for changing.
So you're going to marry permanent revolution in the words of who, Chris?
I think it was Colonel Gaddafi who talked about that. But, I mean...
That's a great idea.
I think it was either Lenin, Marx, or Mao. I'm not sure. There's a merry fuck, kill for you. I mean, Gaddafi might have said it as well.
Yeah, probably,
it wouldn't have been out of character.
It was probably reading from one of those four bears, yeah. Yeah, permanent revolution. Well, I'm marrying the French Revolution. You know, come at me. And just so I don't get in trouble with the French Revolution, I'm going to fuck Napoleonic France, because that seems like a safer bet. And like my wife would have me do, I am going to kill the Ancien Régime.
I'm definitely going to fuck the French Revolution for all the reasons that you said, Chris, but I'm not marrying that bitch. Like, exciting, it's fun. As you said, like, you know, you say something and then it becomes invention.
It's a messy bitch.
She's a messy bitch, you know what I mean? So, like, I'm going to enjoy myself, but I can't marry that. I'm going to make a choice that no, you know what? Fuck it. I don't care. I'm going to marry the Ancien Régime and I'm going to be really rich. And I don't care. I don't want to go outside. I don't want to see those poor people. And if I even think I see one of the shadows, I am sending the guards out. Find them! They're taking our land. I want to live in opulence. I just want to have a great time within those four mega walls. So I'm going to marry that.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm, killing the favorite. It's not great. Because here's what I don't really need, if I'm being honest. I don't want
to... Laws, order, I don't
wanna
education.
I don't want to edge ever closer to a place where, like, suddenly we all have rights. Like, what's the fun in that? Do you know what I mean? Like, But how do I know that I'm the best when my rights are so much rightier than your rights? And you don't have any and you're gone. That's not my vibe, personally. Like, I've had to accept the time that I'm living in. But, yeah. No. Kill.
Merry Christmas.
Well, look at that. We each got one, you guys. Well, that's better than an orange.
It is. Oh, I can't wait to look at my pretty dresses.
Well, Merry Christmas from Chris and happy holidays from the rest of us. And we'll see you in the new year.